So, welcome everybody. We're starting this new. So, we've been doing a class for, I don't know, I think about 5 years. That was postmodernism and Buddhism, which was trying to make a contact between Western thought and Buddhism at a really deep level over quite a few years. That's been going on for quite a while, and some of the people in here are actually from that class. But people decided it would be good to maybe have an opportunity to talk about Buddhism from a series of themes into the more contemporary world for this semester and get people. And also, there was a lot of people online that were invited that have been at meditation sessions or other activities that we've had that haven't had a chance to have communication very much. By the way, when we finish sitting, if anybody's feeling more comfortable sitting in a chair, is fine. There's chairs back here, and it's fine to sit in a chair. So if people are uncomfortable on the floor after a little while, if you want to sit in a chair, it's fine. So the first one's freedom. We were going to take
Yeah.
up the.
What is real freedom?
So what is real
Real
freedom?
freedom.
We thought that might be a good topic to start with, and then if you look at the rest of the topics, we'll take up topics that seem to be really important to all of us. So freedom, we pick freedom first. So let me say what I'm going to do is say a few words about freedom and then open it up to questions. I think most of the time we want to spend in questions and answers and dialogue, both from the people online and the people in the room. But let me just say a couple of words about freedom to start with. And I'll try to be a little bit provocative. So, what I want to do is kind of initiate a conversation. So I might be a little provocative, but I think what I'm interested in is how I would suggest that this generation that we live in right now has the greatest amount of freedom of any generation in the history of the world. And yet we haven't figured out how to use it. So my challenge is, how do we take the greatest amount of freedom across so many people having so much freedom? And I'll explain the different aspects of what I mean by freedom. And yet, we haven't really been able to use that freedom to a real liberation. We seem to be extremely distracted, extremely caught up in all kinds of activities that still seem to be driven very much by instinctual pressures or impulsive pressures or distractive pressures and so forth. So I think the goal tonight would be maybe come up with a few ideas in our own minds about how we can use this freedom that we have to actually gain a certain amount of free a more intensive or extensive freedom. And I think Buddhism is a particularly insightful the Buddha has some really insightful ideas about freedom. So, when I say that we have the greatest amount of freedom, if you look at it, we have the kinds of things that held people in the past: gender, culture, religion, you know, all the different elements of economics, you know, political identities. If you look at it, for most people from the 60s on, and if you look at each generation, I'm particularly taking the generation of the baby boom, what we call now the X and the millennium generation. So we got three basic generations I'm speaking about here. So if you look at it, there's this tremendous amount of freedom that opened up over 30 to 40 years. And but as that freedom opened up, it didn't really make contact with an actual liberation that people are comfortable with or confident in. So first of all, I just want to ask people here, what do they feel first of all about? Do people here see the kind of freedom I'm talking about as a sort of characteristic of our time? Does anybody have any comments or questions about that before we move to the next?
So maybe I was gonna, can I just go back 2 steps just to kind of set up the
Yeah.
class? So I realized, maybe move the job real close. Just quickly introduce myself. We go real quickly with introductions first.
Okay.
And then go jump in. So we're not going to go too long with introductions because a lot of people here, but I want to just give a little bit of the intent of the class. This is the first time we're doing something like this. So you can, if you're a little bit patient, we have some, you know, technical things going on. So we're trying to balance a lot of things at once. But basically, this class, the title is Buddhism for the Modern Mind. And the intent of it is to basically bring Buddhism into dialogue with what modern people, you know, what people are thinking about in their lives, connected to the daily life, their experiences. And over these years, many people have come through the monastery, come for the sessions at the City of 10,000 Buddhas, have come for events here in Berkeley Monastery, and then say gone abroad or gone to other places, and they haven't been able to feel connected to the monastery still because they're out on their own in some faraway land away from the Dharma. You know, in the world outside, sometimes it's hard to get some Dharma. So there's been a lot of requests to have something for them. So this is our first attempt to start something that is going to foster a bit of a community. So we're hoping to foster an online community of people who are going to be able to log in online, who come to our events, to kind of slowly have people who are familiar with each other, have a way for people to interact with each other, etc. So this is just a first kind of trial run, this first time, and then we'll kind of build on it. So just to quickly introduce, this class, I think the main person speaking is Doug Powers. If people aren't familiar with him, he's been teaching,
leading the discussion,
and he's been here since the beginning in terms of the starting of Berkeley Monastery, and also very early on, meeting the founder, the Venerable Master Xuan Hua in the late 1960s, I believe. And so he also taught high school for 40 years, I think, over 40 years. And so he talks with a lot of energy. He basically wears us all out just from being able to speak with so much force. So it's very nice to be able to speak with, because he immediately connects it with the modern young person's heart. That's been my experience when I first, actually I was introduced to the Dharma much from Doug's talks. And so the theme, the way this class is constructed is that Doug has to take care of his father, who is very ill. And so he's going to be a teacher once a week. And the other week,
every other week.
And then the week in between, Jing Hushu and myself will lead another discussion. And we're going to have that discussion called Decoding Doug. So try to explain what Doug said. Because he goes to
So they already have to start now. What was he talking about?
What is he actually talking about? Freedom? What? And he goes into all this. And so Doug's specialty is like Western philosophy and kind of understanding the mind and psychology. So he uses a lot of concepts and things that oftentimes everybody's face in the morning goes, what is it? Okay. And he's trying to connect all these ideas. So the week in between is going to be a chance people can ask more questions. And Jing Hushu and myself will lead those discussions. We'll see if we understand Doug. But basically the idea is that the week in between we'll have a chance to do that. So I'll give it a little bit of time. Maybe we can go around. Just people can quickly just say their name and where they're from. And maybe you could speak a little bit loudly so that people online can hear you. And just quickly say name and where you're from. And that way people can all throw their sound in. I'll also just say who's online just so people have a sense of who's here. So I'll start with myself. My name is Jing Chuan, and I'm here at Berkeley Buddhist Monastery and sometimes at the City of 10,000 Buddhas, but mostly here.
I'm Jin He. I'm a resident monk at Berkeley Monastery.
Hi, my name is Jason Sang. I live here in Berkeley.
You can pass that around.
It passes around.
No, okay. Just put it in the
middle. So speak a little bit loudly.
Yes, sorry. Okay. That's it. Keep going.
That's good. Okay.
Okay. So Doug Powers, I was introduced.
Marion Kwan Alameda. Alice, Berkeley.
Emily Huang, Berkeley.
I'm from Oakland.
I'm Tao from Southern California.
Molly, Berkeley.
Tina, Albany.
Lauren, Berkeley.
Orlan, San Francisco.
Well.
Laura, Berkeley.
Angela, Berkeley.
Mama Wynn, Oakland.
Chuck, I live in the neighborhood.
Steve from Oakland. Okay, and I'm going to do a code on this, Jason. No, okay. So the people who are online are quickly. These are the people who are registered. We haven't got a login quite set up yet, so we can't have everybody. Okay, so we have Alan Huang leading the group at City of 10,000 Buddha. I believe Fu Lin's there with Alan and a couple people there. Cynthia Cheng, my mom, in Saratoga, California. That was the phone call trying to get technical support. Flavia Lee Faust, she's at home, logged in. I believe she's in Ukiah. Brittany Bowden Porter is in Hayward, California. Yi Huan Shi is in Oakland, California. Liz Wong from New York City. Kenny Kanata from Sedona, Arizona. Well, I did Arizona. Man Huang from Minnesota. Yuen Lin Tan is in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Ellen Axelrod is at home. Okay. Jason Kung is in Portland, Oregon. Michael O'Connell is from Staten Island. Connie Long is in Davis, California. So that you see Davis. Liz Wong. Trang Phan is in San Diego, California. And CDDB is here. It's Christina Ferrara in Staten Island. Jing Kai at the City of 10,000 Buddhas. So those are Yu Ching Chang, Jennifer, is in LA. And I believe that's all for now. So probably more people will log in bit by bit. So, okay. So that's just the group. And I just wanted to throw people's names out so people at least hear who's here. Over time, we're going to try to build out like a discussion forum and a way that people can log in and kind of be able to share things. So that will be something over time. Oh, so anyway, at CDDB, we have Fu Lin, Guo Fu, Marion, Dharma Master Jing Kai, and Alan. Okay, thank you. Okay, so anyway, that's just one of the interviews. And also, we have a sign-in sheet. So if you can just write your name, your email, and your location, we'll just pass it around.
So, one of the reasons of picking freedom is it's such an important, the Buddha was particularly interested in freedom, and the current contemporary mind is very interested in freedom. So freedom as a topic really ties together the major focus of Buddhism and the major focus of the contemporary mind. A lot of it has to do with the question of what freedom, how do we free ourselves? What's freedom? What does freedom feel like? The first question in would people generally agree that they're here, everyone here is concerned and interested in freedom? What do people,
how would you define freedom?
Freedom? Well, first of all, freedom is a feeling, right? Freedom is a sense of infinite possibility. And every time you act on one of those possibilities, it's gone from infinite to that possibility, right? So freedom starts from a conscious aware experience. It's within your conscious awareness, and it's a feeling of that awareness, your conscious awareness, of not being tied down or taken up by something. Are we good so far?
So
your conscious awareness, we're starting from the assumption here that we know that we're all on the same page and recognizing that everyone in this room each of our experiences are happening within our conscious awareness. There's no other place anything could be going on. We could talk about science, we can talk about means of communication about our experience with other people. And for instance, science is useful because we have common measurements than each of us have in our conscious awareness that we share. And we use language to share, think we have some sense of sharing conscious awareness. So, but the place in which everyone in this room forever has their sense of ongoing existence is in their conscious awareness. So the degree to which that conscious awareness has an open space, a not limited space, full of possibilities and possibilities of that why, where the conscious awareness has a large degree of spaciousness, to use a metaphor, a spaciousness of your conscious awareness has spaciousness. And if you notice, as soon as your mind dwells on something or gets attached to something, that spaciousness collapses on the object of desire. Are we on the same page here? So we're talking about the conscious awareness, and tonight we want to talk about how it comes down on objects of desire, why it comes down on objects or of anything, of any objects or any experience or any thought or any emotion or anything that arises in that conscious awareness, collapses the infinity of it to a focus. Freedom is that conscious awareness when it hasn't been limited to a focus. That's a starting definition. Is everybody, are we all in the same? And everybody lives in that free conscious awareness all day long, right? Right? Nobody gets limited. Really? You guys all actually live in free conscious awareness all the time? So this isn't a theoretical, we're not talking about anything philosophical or theoretical here. This is not a class of, we don't want to, this isn't a class, and we're not talking about something theoretical. If you're, we're talking about an experience, we're talking about something about each person in the room, each person online or in the room, they need to conjure up in their imagination the amount of that conscious awareness they can conjure up. This is not a theoretical, philosophical position. This is the actual conscious awareness you're using to pay attention to me with right now. So freedom is the degree to which that conscious awareness has that sort of spaciousness. We'll start there, okay? All right. Now, what limits that are a multitude of things. Okay, we can start talking about what provides a sense of, you know, sort of direction, or what moves that conscious awareness is a multitude of things. There's the gender we're in, the culture we're in, the language we're in, the time we're in. All of these. The eon we're in, you know, the world we're in, I mean, all the body we're in. So now if we want to start talking about the limitations and the context of this conscious awareness, there are a multitude of things we could begin to point to that are the context in which we experience this conscious awareness. Are we good so far? You have to kind of slow me down because... But does everyone understand what I'm talking about? These layers... And if you look at like social sciences and humanities, what they're doing is they're analyzing those layers. You know, you're in a culture, you're in a language, you're in a gender. And if you've been in university for the last 30 or 40 years, you spent all your time analyzing the cultural or gender context that was overlaying that conscious awareness.
Wait, no. I think let's have a hands up to see if anyone would like Doug to expand on his definition of freedom.
Well, we are expanding on it. Let me go for about 5 minutes because I'm actually am expanding on it, and a lot of people are following the logic of what I'm saying. So this conscious awareness, if you look at the situation we're in the last 30 years, why I say you have the greatest potential in this generation of the last three generations. The greatest amount of freedom is because the big things that held that in place, like for instance, you were born into a religion. You were born into Confucian Chinese culture. You were born into a woman's role in gender that you couldn't have no chance to get out of. There was no place in those for any reflection on what I'm talking about. Does everybody see until what I would call the modern era, which I would place maybe at Nietzsche? You know, Nietzsche's insight into perspectivism, that everything's, and I'm not going to launch on that tonight, but I'd say it somewhere around, you know, late 1800s, maybe earlier in the 1760s with Western Schopenhauer, you know, maybe Hume, you know, Berkeley, Hume, Schopenhauer, Nietzsche, you know, Husserl, Heidegger, you know, boom, 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 existential. And in the East, we had Buddhism very early, looking at and undermining and looking at those constructs that we're in as limitations, and the Buddha said were illusions. What he was talking about, illusions are those. When he said identity, he was meaning gender identity, cultural identity, blah, blah, blah. Okay, or not just personal identity, because what is personal identity? It's a structure. Is there? So why? So my provocative first point is that I think this generation has had the greatest amount of possible freedom, and yet I don't see they've made something out of it yet. It's a little disappointing. There's all this potential freedom, but rather than delving down into and developing the freedom of that conscious awareness, it seems to be even more distracted and even more driven by impulse and even less understood in terms of how it moves that conscious awareness, how different elements move that conscious awareness around. Now, I'll get into more details about that last point later, but just to give you the theme of the evening, I want to make that provide, and then I want to actually, hopefully, at some point, even get at ways we might be able to make a greater freedom out of the freedom we have, based on looking at what the Buddha would say about this particular freedom we're in right now. But does everybody understand when I'm talking about the freedom? Because you even have the place of reflection. Everybody in this room has the place of reflection where they could start to look at the conscious awareness that wasn't totally overwhelmed by the cultural, gender, and other elements of it, where you'd never have a reflection out of. Does everybody get that? I would say that's the post, that's the modern mind versus the feudal. I mean, there's a modern mind of reflection that I'm assuming everybody in here, I'm making a lot of assumptions, but we're assuming all of us in this room are in the reflective mind, right? This sort of is the difference between fundamentalism, for instance. Fundamentalism believes in the truth that you're in without reflection. And then your identity comes from fundamentalism, and your identity comes from the construct you're in without reflection, right? I mean, you can be a fundamentalist scientist, you can be a fundamentalist macroeconomic economist, right? You can be a fundamentalist woman. Is anybody following me? Okay. So obviously this freedom is way past fundamentalism. So I'm not even going into the question of fundamentalism, no matter what that takes, because we're assuming everybody in here is past that. If you're not, you're not going to be interested anyway, so it won't matter. Okay, is everybody? We'll just sort everybody out right away, okay? But that just gets us into where we are. That doesn't help at all. Just to say that we're in the modern mind, reflective mind, that's just the starting place of our conversation. We're assuming that, okay? Okay, you want me to stop for just a second, or did you want me to?
Is everyone okay? Does everyone follow? Okay.
So once we launch then into this modern mind, we have all this freedom from that, but then where does it go? If it doesn't get caught up in, for instance, gender, okay, so then you're 32 years old. You're a woman at 33 years old. You've had 20 years of freedom in this generation, this is an incredible amount of freedom in sexuality, in identity, in career, in every single element. Let's just take, as a woman, you've had all this freedom that even your mother, who was battling the forces of all this, still has scars from, that you don't have the same scars from. I'm just going to take one group of people, okay? So you don't have the same scars. You have a kind of all these freedoms in there, but where does it go? What is it used for? Because when you find yourself in all that freedom, there's all this energy to it. There's all this excitement about it. There's all this liberation about it. But where is it going? What's it going to do? If you notice, in a lot of cases, it has at 33, 34, it decides to have a baby. Now, that happened a few times in a few other generations. I'm just pointing out that isn't a particularly new result. I don't want to be too provocative here, but I mean, I would have to say in the history of the world, that isn't a particularly new result. Let me just, In other words, where is that energy going to go in a liberated way that doesn't begin to fall back into other patterns of the past? Simply, and why does that happen in most cases? The lack of imagination of something to do with it other than that. Is everybody... I'm being provocative, I know. But is everybody following me? My suggestion is you would have to have something like Buddhism. You'd have to have something like what the Buddha was talking about freedom, that you were working on in your 20s and 30s. To use that freedom in your 30s and 40s to go anywhere else with, male or female, or whatever. Because without actually knowing what to do with it and transforming the energy of that freedom, without knowing how to do that, then it's my thesis that you will pretty much end up in the patterns of the past. Because the forces about the fundamental forces that are at work, without a transformation of those energies, will come back, will become powerful forces within your conscious and unconsciousness that you really don't understand entirely and haven't really transformed. Okay, I'll stop there for just a second because I made a lot of things I could get in a lot of trouble. There was a lot, those are many politically incorrect things. Let me just say that I can understand though why it would be very hard for the millennium generation to understand this, because they've gotten no reinforcement for the freedom of this conscious awareness. Their entire time in college, they were getting all kinds of determinisms, cultural determinism. It's not really your conscious awareness isn't really yours. That's a bourgeois idea. Actually, your conscious awareness is part of a cultural context. And the only way you can understand your identity is through cultural context, or through gender or something. You got that for 30 years. You got scientific determinism that you're an object and their conscious awareness is just coming out of a history going to the Big Bang, blah, 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 blah. And your current conscious awareness is just a projection of your body and materiality. If I look at the last 30 years, there's been almost no reinforcement given to people to develop the conscious awareness at the level of freedom that we're talking about it. In fact, every element of culture and education has been teaching different forms of the lack of freedom of that conscious awareness and various levels of determinism from culture to science, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay? Okay, I'll stop there for just a second because that's... Does everybody understand what I'm saying? So where was the where was there anything in there that there was a reinforcement in the conscious awareness that you were living in every second for developing that conscious awareness to another level of freedom and another level? Nothing. Zero. Does everybody understand? Very little. Does everybody understand what I'm saying from your experience? Does everybody see what I'm saying from your experience?
Can you explain a little bit determinism in this context?
Determinism, for instance, one of the determinisms that you guys have been taught is the scientific determinism. Science themselves are not determinists, but the way you've been taught it is deterministic. In other words, material, scientific inquiry doesn't make a claim. Physics doesn't make a claim that the world exists outside of the theories that we're applying. It's a theoretical framework. Science is a theoretical framework. It never meant to say that it was actually that each person's experience was actually determined from scientific causes, because if you were actually to make that claim, this movement of this arm is infinitely complex. Is everybody fine? When I move my arm like this, to explain the actual causality of moving my arm like this is infinitely complex. And all we're doing from the scientific approach is taking the infinity of the complexity of that and breaking it down to two or three interesting points that I might talk about causally that the two of us can measure and share our communication about. That's all we're doing. Did anybody follow me? Okay, sir. From a scientific view, moving this arm is infinitely complex, because I'd have to go back to the big quarks, electrons, blah, the biology, the neurons, blah, 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 the history, blah, 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 blah. I won't take you through the whole.
Yeah. Can you explain exactly what scientific determinism is, like what?
Scientific determinism is the way that most people in this room, or most people understand science, to be saying that an action that we take now is caused from, in a material context, from a series of cause and effects that go back that are explainable in a kind of Newtonian scientific construct, which long ago has not been really what science itself has tried to put forward. From physics and so on, we know that it's much more complex. It's not a deterministic. Science is not really explaining a deterministic world. But most people in their understanding of science have taken it as a determinism. Therefore, they think their conscious awareness is a reflection of their bodies. And their bodies are part of a deterministic context of biology, physics, and blah, 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 blah. And therefore, the conscious awareness you're using right now, it doesn't have its own nature, but rather is caused by something else called material, which is the base of materialism. And actually, materialism is just energy to be. So you can see this goes on and on and on. But so therefore, you've spent most of your time not paying attention to the learning how to pay attention to your conscious awareness as you're actually experiencing existence moment to moment, but rather various theories that overlay that conscious experience that you take to be what's going on or take to be your identity. Is everybody fine? And each one of you have your own, probably your own theory. What does that do? It takes the responsibility away from the place in your conscious awareness that you would have freedom and gives it to something else. Does everybody see? You take your, by through the act of any kind of ideology or determinism, you take the place where your conscious awareness could actually pay attention and understand what's going on with a sense of freedom. And by putting any ideology of any kind over that, then puts the responsibility outside your own conscious awareness onto another mechanism that's theoretical and not your actual experience. Did anybody follow me right there?
Can you give me an example? Let's say you had experience. Can you walk? I'm not quite following the difference.
So, for instance, everything from the point of view of conscious awareness, the only place that you would be able to see your freedom in that conscious awareness would be paying attention to your conscious awareness, where you're able to watch your own mind and believe that what's arising in your own mind as emotion or thought is something of your own process, not a process outside or happening to you. Like neurobiology, for instance. Neurobiology takes thoughts that you're having that are actually happening in your conscious awareness, and it makes you think of those as though they're happening to you as movements on neurons that are connected to a biological construct and then even on to physics constructs that have a causation outside of your own consciousness. I mean, that's true for every, but you could also turn it to history. Like the reason that your conscious awareness is limited is because you're a woman, or because you're operating in a Chinese culture that has certain Confucian blah 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 constructs, or you're operating within an economic. We have lots of economic determinism, because you don't have enough money. Your conscious awareness is affected by the amount of money you have. Your conscious awareness, in terms of the fundamental conscious awareness, it's not how much money, it's how you're reacting and interpreting and experiencing whatever economic, political, gender, cultural aspect that you find yourself in. Is everybody? But conscious awareness is primary, and these overlays are completely secondary. Are we good so far?
So how about the idea of like fatalism, as in this is your fate, or this is the fate that I've earned?
There's absolutely no, in your conscious awareness right now that you're paying attention to me, there's no such thing as that concept. That's a theory that you've had to make up about your experience. There is absolutely nothing in your conscious awareness that in any way shows you any fatalism whatsoever. Why? Because your conscious awareness is always in the eternal present. Not one of you can ever show me a moment of conscious awareness that isn't in the eternal present. So even an idea of a past or future, something you're making up, it might be useful. I'm not saying it's not useful. I'm not saying it's not useful to make up a theoretical construct that has time in it. But you have to make it up. But your conscious awareness has to put the future in a certain position and the past in a certain position causally. It's not there. It's not there in your conscious awareness. It's something that you're putting on top of your conscious awareness as a part and process of it that helps you with causation and so forth. But that's a secondary issue for the moment, because we're talking about freedom, not structure. There's lots of structures. But we're talking now about somebody asked me the question of freedom. I'm just defining freedom, okay, first. So.
Here's where I lost you. I completely understand that the original conscious awareness is the primary sensation, and that perceptions are the secondary overlay. I lost how that connects to determinism.
Any idea you have whatsoever that conscious awareness is in the control of anything else other than your conscious awareness is determinism.
Okay.
So now I just want to raise.
So we have all different kind of determinisms, and what's the purpose of determinisms? They're mainly to avoid responsibility for your own existence. Okay, the main purpose of determinism, there's several purposes of determinism. The first purpose of determinism is the society's way to control you and everyone else around you to control you. So the first question is about power, okay? So everyone wants to have power over you, and the main job of the culture is to control you. I mean, that's its main job. Society's job is to control your conscious awareness. That's its job. So we're in this, like, because we're talking about freedom tonight, right? Okay, so does everybody see that freedom to actually have a sense of conscious awareness as free from all these these overlays? It requires a lot. I'm not saying it's easy, because the pressures are coming from all sides. And so culture and society, even look at the whole economic theory of capitalism, is an attempt to force you to be productive for society on the basis of a trade for your time to produce a product for the money that you get for the freedom of your mind in another way. Is everybody? It's a trade of time. I mean, the whole of capitalism, the whole of economics is simply controlling time, your time. You only have time, right? You exist. And how is that controlled? And economics is the system by which your time is controlled, okay, to be productive in a certain kind of way, to have a certain, and in free market capitalism, who is it that's supposed to determine my time? You, by buying the stuff I produce, or the things I think, or what, in some kind of way. And in the exchange between our two productivities, freedom, so we create a dynamic, right? Okay, so, but anytime any of you put anything, give any power to anything outside of the conscious awareness itself, then there's a determinism, and there's always a purpose behind that. There's always a purpose of your avoiding something, or external forces trying to be in control of you, or the other person living in your house is trying to keep you under their control, or whatever, you know. Are we clear? Now, the moment of determinism is when you give that that theory the magic of truth. You have to give the magic. Truth is a magic, right? There's no truth. Truth is a magic that you put on something. Does everybody understand the magic of truth? You put truth on something and you give it magic. It's the ultimate sorcery. Truth. Ah, truth. I put the magic on it. I put the dust. From the point of view of conscious awareness, your own conscious awareness, throwing the magic dust of truth on there is a loss a fundamental loss of the place you actually exist and the way you actually exist. Sure, we can find a million ways to explain why, you know, there's a million explanations of control and reasons why. But if you look at the major reason from it from your own point of view is to avoid responsibility for every action you've ever made and taken. I would say that's one of the biggest problems when I start now wanting to delve into why the modern age has not been able to seize hold of its freedom to the degree it's had. Is there's one point right there. If you're really going to have freedom, then you need absolute responsibility. And the only way you can have absolute responsibility is have a theory of absolute freedom. Is there? If you don't have absolute freedom, you can't have. If you don't have absolute responsibility, you can't have absolute freedom. So if you've given the responsibility away to some other theory about culture, about economics, about blah, 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 then whatever theory you've given that away to, you've given away the responsibility and the freedom at the same time to exactly the same degree. Is there, thought by thought, you've lost exactly the amount of freedom of your conscious awareness that you've given away your own responsibility. So when the Buddha said, when the Buddha says, everything is created from the mind, what he means is that what the Buddha meant was you are responsible and that the karma was your own responsibility. What he meant was you have to take responsibility for every action and every outcome you make as though it was yours entirely or you could never be liberated. In any place that you don't take full responsibility, you can't have freedom. Okay? Are we, by definition, okay, are we good? Are we good so far?
Are we moving on to, it seems like determinism seems more interesting, or are we staying on absolute freedom?
Oh, determinism sounds really interesting to everybody because everybody's looking for the avoidance of absolute freedom, for sure. Determinism is really boring, though. See, because everyone in here has many, many different theories of determinism that they've learned and they're using, right? Do I really need to make a list of them for the people in here? It seems to me that's kind of boring because you can look up your own list. I'm this, I'm that, they have this, the 1%, blah, blah, blah. Now, we're not talking about social justice. We're talking about freedom. So let's make sure we're on the same page here today. We're not on the issue of social justice. We're on the issue of freedom. Okay? When it comes to freedom, and remember, when you say, well, social justice is the freedom of everyone to be equally free. So how can they be equally free if you don't even know what freedom is? You say, oh, I have compassion for other people. Oh, I love this person. What do you mean? You mean you want them to be absolutely free, right? You don't want to have your needs and desires and things to be controlling them so they act in a certain way to you to reinforce your weaknesses and things. Are you calling needy love and then the amount you neediness meet each other? So even things like love and interconnection have to do with this issue because if we were really about our actual consciousness where we actually exist and our real conscious awareness, then what you would want for everybody else is the achievement of their completely free conscious awareness, which is almost the opposite of what everybody's doing with each other. We're just trying to control the other person in some sort of way to get your projections of your own stuff met by somebody else, which is just your projections to begin with. Never works anyway, right? So in the millennium people, I really like it because they have very limited expectations. See, which is a really interesting approach to this. If I have no expectations of you at all, it's a very interesting, so then I'm completely free, we're completely free to interact, we just hook up whenever, and then at the last minute we text, no, I can't do this, and we're all supposed to leave each other to do whatever they want, and just a complete flowing thing. Now, it seems to me like a lot of work, but, you know, more power to it. It seems to me like there's a few other things you have to develop to do that, because if you're actually needy, it sounds like hell. Because then you have to have If you're not based on loyalty but no expectations, then that means you have to have 50 things to do on Saturday afternoon to make sure you're not left alone at 10 o'clock because everybody's doing whatever they want to do and you can't hold anybody accountable for anything. It sounds like a lot of work. You better have 40 things backed up on Saturday afternoon to make sure you're not left in the lurch. And then you're there by yourself. So it seems like a lot of work. It's a lot of hooking up, but I mean, more power to everybody. Does anybody get my, I'm being a little ironic, a little sarcastic, but I'm also, okay. Now.
The goal also speaks of extremes.
Extreme? No, I wasn't being extreme at all right there. That was actually very normative.
Doug, coming back to your question, it's kind of hard to answer that because normal people don't even know that their consciousness can be free.
They actually do.
Really?
All people actually live in their conscious awareness. Not a single person doesn't. The Buddha said, everyone has the nature. When the Buddha said, everyone has the nature, the Buddha was saying, everyone lives in the conscious awareness I've just described.
But they don't even know they can be free.
No.
We didn't.
They are living in their conscious awareness. The question of whether they know they can be free or not is just a question of their experience. It's not a question of capacity. It's not a question of... It's a question of, okay, I'm going to make a provocative statement. This is my, I'm going to provoke you. The reason I think the contemporary world is having such a hard time is because I don't think they have enough confidence in their own nature. I think the current problem is not what everybody thinks it is. I think they just haven't gone far enough. I think this generation has a fundamental fear of what they actually know. They have a fear, they have a lack of confidence in the fundamental nature that's already got a sense of freedom. That's the fundamental problem. If I could point to a single problem that I think grounds the whole thing, it's a lack of confidence in the conscious awareness has been free to experience itself. It knows the freedom, it just doesn't have confidence in the freedom. And it's looking for some solution, and all the fun, what's called modern fun, is simply relieving the anxiety of the lack of confidence. Now that's a little provocative, but what's called Vegas clubbing, which I really like, Vegas clubbing is to take an extreme phenomena. Vegas clubbing is a desperate attempt to have a good time, to relieve the anxiety of a lack of confidence in a person's confidence in their own awareness, their own aware nature. And if they're overwhelmed, if you're constantly overwhelmed by distractions, it takes up the conscious awareness of the doubts and the lack of confidence. It's based on anxiety. The current aspect of fun is not based on eroticism. It's based on fear. The 60s, late 60s, was based on eroticism. But now it's based on fear.
So you say they're afraid of themselves when everything is quiet?
Because actually the freedom, I'm just being provocative here, but there is such a great degree of freedom that nobody knows what to do with that freedom in themselves, and they lack the confidence to use that freedom in a profound sense. And therefore, because they lack the confidence, they're now looking for distractions and activities. And because of the anxiety of not being able to know what to do with the freedom they have. Now you can, yeah.
I'd actually like to respond to that, because what's coming up for me is for the last three generations, you know, our parents, the people before us, have been breaking through, you know, all of these containers. You know, they've done the civil rights movements, they've fought for equal rights for the sexes. Gender roles have changed massively because of that, the type of work that we do. What I wonder is if this anxiety has collectively come about because there is so much freedom, because we've broken apart all of the containers that make our society work, and now there's no structure to make things work like they used to, so we don't know what to do.
Isn't that what I just said?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've restated it. Mm-hmm. I would say you're much more free. I would, however, say after hanging mostly with 30-year-olds, I actually think you're much more free than the baby boom generation. And in fact, the baby generation in some ways has an easier time because they were working against something that the something they're working against is still there. Mm-hmm. So the revolution of the 60s and 70s was a revolution against something where a lot of the there is still there. Whereas by the second generation movement, by now 27 to 32, there was never any there to react against. So it's just a free-floating freedom that goes moment to moment from, you know, 15, 16, 17, and just a freedom that just 10 years of just kind of basic freedom of a flow of how do I feel right now? Well, I feel like this, and I go do this, and then I feel like this, I go. It's a great motion of freedom. But the problem is where does it go? What does it do? How does it use that freedom in some sort of way? So I think you just, yeah, I mean, I would completely, but it's already done. We're not going back.
No, but so, the next step is to create the new container. That's
well, that's what we're sitting here for, yeah.
The container is no freedom. Well, I don't know about that.
Well, that's what we're... Well, that's what we're, that's, okay, so that's what, I would say that's what
so
we're about.
To shape energy.
Yeah.
And to be a conduit to, like, you know, like we need electric cords to plug in things so that they light up and we can use them. If we don't have the electric cord, if we don't have a container and a conduit for that energy, sometimes we can't.
Well, I'm going to make an argument that I don't think we're going to any container. So I think we're going to have to go, don't think I have an answer. I mean, we're just provoking a conversation, which is, I think, pretty, we said contemporary, but was it contemporary? I'm trying to be actually contemporary, not theoretically contemporary. I don't think there's an answer, and the people in this room are going to have to create the answer. It's not going to be in the ways the containers were before. And I'm not even sure if it's a container. I would almost have to say that it might be an opening to a, like, really profound liberation. That is a freedom that, taking that freedom even further, that we haven't really grasped yet. But there's some suggestions I would have about how we might, what kind of things we might need to work on or look to do that. But I'm just, again, it seems to me we could go either way, but I'd rather go that Buddhism, that what the Buddha was teaching was ultimate liberation to the far edge of this, not back to something. Now, people like to go back to, like, stuff, they're more welcome. I'm not very interested in it, but I'm sure there's lots of people interested in going back to stuff. So if you like to go back, this is not the right conversation. If you want to create some form of back to something, this isn't the right conversation. I'm sure lots of people would like to join that, though.
So I think you're being provocative, of course, so you're framing it very negatively, but I think there's another way to look at how people are doing things these days.
Have I been negative?
Well, you say it's driven by fear.
No, the reaction to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So another way to look at it is there was an article in the, I think it was New York Times a couple of weeks back, saying how museums, who used to be sort of like these storehouses for ancient art artifacts, and there were standard ways of interpreting it and understanding it. This was great art, this was low art. So now what they've gone to is people are into experience. So now museums are in the business of creating experiences for people. And so there's installation art pieces that are driven by experience. So they're in the same sort of idea of conscious awareness, but now the motive is to accumulate new and novel experiences.
Right, and that's a good example of, you know, moving into this, and there's a whole bunch. I mean, we could see a whole bunch of positive sense of direction in this. And we could go there. There's probably 20, 30, 40 things I could look at right away as far as, I would say, positive descriptions of this freedom. And we could make a list of those. What I'm asking people, though, here is, what are they emotionally, psychologically, in terms of the conscious awareness starting from the place of freedom, absolute freedom of conscious awareness, because that's sort of the where we kind of started, is this conscious, what I was referring to that you were taking a little bit negative was, are people able to go into that conscious awareness with a greater degree of freedom to that, or do they feel they have to take it up with something? I'm more at the level of, I mean, the conversation's more at the level of, in your sense of yourself and the people around you, is this freedom of conscious awareness something that you're able to enter comfortably and grow in, or does it feel like it's being, or does it feel like it has to be distracted? Does it feel comfortable? So here's one of the places I would look as a clue to this. It seems to me one of the universal aspects to look at conscious, this kind of freedom of conscious awareness, is how comfortable you are in solitude, for instance. A really good marker of this is your comfort in solitude. Are you really comfortable yourself in your own conscious awareness in solitude for extended periods of time? If you were, I would trust the place of that conscious awareness in solitude. And from that, you would have, it's not to take you away from relationships, but you would relate to people different with a comfort in the solitude than out of a hyperactivity or need or desire. In other words, from that solitude, different kinds of relationships would emerge from that freedom than that driven by, sort of hyperactivity of a sense of lacking or desiring or wanting or missing or be missing out on something or not being in a social web of something where I'm constantly checking to see if somebody's befriending me, you know. Like, because once we're on this technology, if you notice, can you go off your technology entirely? Because the technology is totally in the way of your solitude. And in fact, it, to such a degree that it's pretty hard to even find the place of solitude within the construct of technology, because the major aspect of technology, most of technology, is not just to communicate, but actually communicate where it's very difficult to develop your sense of solidity in your own solitude, complete comfort, a kind of comfort in your own solitude. I'm just using that as a measuring place. Is everybody here really comfortable? And I mean your solitude. I mean not just like you meditate for a half an hour. That's already like an activity. I mean how you experience yourself in your conscious awareness all the time. Are you comfortable with yourself in your own solitude? Or is there something always impinging in that solitude, a desire, need, want, worried, lacking, some sense of lacking that you might be missing something that's impinging in that solitude, so you're not comfortable in that solitude, relaxed and comfortable in that solitude? Because it would seem to me that's a beginning mark of freedom. You know, you just looking for marks of freedom, one of the marks of freedom would be the amount of contentment and comfort you have in your solitude. And if you're not comfortable, if you feel a sense of lack of comfort in your solitude, it's in the solitude that your conscious awareness has the space to exist and reflect. It's in your solitude that it has a place to settle, be contented, reflect, and so forth and so forth and so forth. And solitude, that sense of solitude is far more important than meditating 4 hours a day. The meditating 4 hours a day may help you in developing a sense of comfort in your solitude, But if it's not helping you develop a sense of comfort in your solitude, then it's just another activity. That's an artificial, is an artificial time that's actually taken up in meditation. Again, I can, I'll stop there for a second. What do? So I would suggest, I mean, I'm making a suggestion there that maybe one way that this modern, this contemporary mind might be able to work on this freedom, develop this freedom more fully, is to really work on a sense of developing a sense of comfort in this solitude. And maybe another aspect is that in our relationships to each other, that if we relate to people from, first of all, developing an incredible sense of comfort in our own solitude, then we'd be able to listen to somebody else without all the lack of freedom of need in between. Does everybody see, or desire in between? Is there, if you have a sense of confidence in your own contentment, then the listening to someone else, paying attention, caring about somebody else, caring, listening, attending to another person, could actually have the freedom of attending to them as they are, rather than attending them to your projection of them based on your own needs, desires, wants that are, seem to be like moving faster than you can even find them. That is, so it's not a matter of being, the solitude is not being non-social, it's re-entering to actually be social. I would suggest that without solitude, there is no being social. That other people are basically a projection of the unfree forces moving in you that then are projected on them in ways that you're not really experiencing them, but your projection of them. And then the question is whether they meet your projection out. You like somebody that meets your projection and projects back to you what you think that you, you know. So you have this two people projecting on each other, and as long as you use it for a way to communicate with each other, that might open up some new space. Because if you look at all the old ways of communicating, they were totally caught up. Our relations to each other were very much caught up in our cultural blah, 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 blah. It wasn't just our own freedom within ourselves that was trapped in the old traditional patterns of stuff, but our relations to each other were completely caught up in those patterns. And I think another wonderful thing about the contemporary world is that those old patterns have disappeared, but new patterns haven't taken their place. So people are very open with each other, and they're open to difference. They're very they're very open to difference. They're in many, many ways. They have many, and people have incredibly non-traditional ways of relating to each other, and friendships, and all kinds of different friendships and different relationships of friendship. And everyone's sorting through all these different friendships and a way to relate in communities and tribes, but nothing's really gelled exactly. Because in that open intercommunication and tribal interaction, there's the problem is people just keep moving through the group. You got a group of 10 people hanging out, breaking, then two people go somewhere else, two other people, you end up with the three people that were there from like 9 months ago. And before you know it, it's an entirely new, you might be in the same house, but with seven different people. So what, in the end of it, there was all this open space and all this relation and everything. But where, but what grounds would there be that would follow through in some kind of way that would create relations that would be over the long term will function? You know, will function over a longer period of term. There's really not, it's not really clear how that's going to work out. Is everybody fine? It's very open, it's very fluid, it's very, but actually one of the things is you both have an open space for that, but at the same time, it's hard for anything to really gel in that, what would be the foundations of something to gel over time. Okay, so I'll stop again for a second. Does somebody have question or comment?
wonder, is it, what's the cause for our lack of insights of freedoms? Can we, is there a group or something of government or societies that intend to...
No, there's only one reason. There's only one reason. You. Okay, each person, there's only one reason for a lack of understanding your freedom, and that is your own, that you have bought into something. Nobody's making you do anything. For some reason or another, everyone in this room has bought into a whole bunch of crap about how things are, for whatever reason, and I won't go into all the reasons why, because the reasons why for everybody in this room are a whole bunch of different ones. Fear, different fears, different desires, different blah, 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 blahs. For whatever reason, at the end of the day, bottom line, it was you are putting energy into holding on to a belief in something. Each person in here is putting a lot of effort and time into holding on to some sort of ideas about, you know, how things are, that you're not actually ultimately in this conscious awareness in the way we're talking about. And you're putting effort into it because the natural state, this, again, go back to the Buddha, the natural state, this is the difference between the West and the East. This is one of the fundamental differences between the whole history of Western thought and the Buddha. Remember, from the Buddha's view, human nature is good, complete, not lacking anything. Not original sin, not dualism, not missing anything, not sinful, none of this. We're not naturally competitive with each other and want to kill each other. No. What are you talking about? We get born, survival, we have mother, a mother has to take care of us for, you know, many, 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 many years to even survive. We're community. We're not killers. That's just an ideology. We've been taught that. We've been taught all this stuff. From a Buddhist point of view, and this is, I think, one of the most important things that Buddhism brings to the world and the West, is from a Buddhist view, you are complete and totally complete without lacking anything right now in your fundamental nature. Nothing's missing. There's nothing to do. You're just adding all this stuff to do. There's nothing... And every bit of what we're talking about that's a limitation is something that you're adding to it, to the state. So this, you know, contented state of solitude is naturally there. If you just relax, chill out, get comfortable in your own conscious world, it's already there. You don't even have to learn it. You have to learn everything else. You have to work on everything else. You have to work on your confusions. They take effort. You wear yourself out all day.
So done.
I'm sorry. But if all of us aware of that freedom that we have, the choice that we can make, Wall Street would be in trouble.
What would happen?
Wall Street would be in trouble.
Oh, Wall Street would be in trouble. Well, Wall Street might or might not be in trouble, but... the world, let's just say, people relating to each other would be in less trouble. I don't really give a shit about Wall Street that much. You may really care about them. No, but you remember, all that Wall Street's doing is it's just moving money, digits. Remember, money is digits in computers, moving from computers to computers. So let's get, what is Wall Street? Wall Street is digits in computers, moving from computers to computers. It's nothing else. And not only that, it's lost any connection between labor. Originally, those digits were supposed to have something to do with labor productivity, then in turn what people bought in terms of blah, blah, blah. It's lost any connection to that. So actually, it has nothing, Wall Street has nothing to do with the issue either way. Now, we could say it has something to do with economics, and we could have a very interesting conversation on what economics would look like if we were related in this way. We would still have economics. And all the elements of economics, but it would be interesting to see what would come from a value construct where we were equally responsible. One of the things that it would immediately do is one of the hardest things about living with even one other person, let alone five other people in a community, is because there's always a freeloader. You know what? I mean, everything's fine except every damn group has some damn freeloader. And sometimes it's right in your house. Sometimes the other person is a freeloader. Now, it's easier to keep control over one. The reason we end up in these families of one person is it's easier to control the one freeloader than it is five. You know what I'm talking about? Communes don't work because there's usually like at least one freeloader or five. When you get two people together in a house, then if one's a freeloader, the other one can kick the heck out of the other one all the time to make sure they try to do their stuff. But one of the things it does is it takes, by taking the responsibility of the effect on you, then everyone becomes less of a freeloader and everyone becomes more comfortable because the fairness of exchange on both a psychological and physical level become more understandable to people, more direct. Does everybody understand? It becomes more direct when you're on the level that we're talking about, then the actual work you do as related to other people's work around you becomes more directly our mutual efforts. And a lot of the fog around this getting over is limited. Is, you know what I'm saying? So it would have huge effects, but and it would be very interesting what the effects are, but economics wouldn't go away and growing food wouldn't go away, you know, using water wouldn't go away. I mean, it doesn't solve the fundamental, but I mean, Wall Street isn't there anyway. I mean, go away, Wall Street. What do you mean, go away? It's just digits moving in computers. I mean, the Federal Reserve put $4 trillion in the economy and not a dollar got to you. It just went around the computers. Yeah.
So you're saying we trap ourselves into being a prisoner of ourselves because...
we love to do that.
Yeah, and so it prevents us from a deeper level of focus.
Because we're attached
right. To
these the bullshit. We're attached to our own bullshit. And we've invested a lot in our own bullshit about ourselves. We've already invested a lot. Everybody here is old enough to have invested a lot. We don't want to give it up.
Because the way we all grew up is we have to have a family and a structure to feel safe. So as we become older and start thinking independently of for ourselves, we think that we're thinking independently, but what you're saying is we have to be independent of our independence.
If you want to put it that way, we have to be independent. Remember what the Buddha, when the Buddha says the self is an illusion, okay, what the Buddha meant by the self is illusion is that wherever you're attached to a story about yourself is a limitation of your conscious awareness. Wherever you're attached to a story about yourself, then your infinity of conscious awareness is limited to that story. And then that storyline starts taking over and limits the infinity of conscious awareness to this extremely small little life like, what? You mean this granite counter is really important, you know, this blah, 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 whatever, takes the whole, and as it takes, as our conscious awareness and the objects of desire that we desire with that conscious awareness, then take over the space of that conscious awareness, and we do it to ourselves from identifying with that narrative story that we started way long time ago. That's when the Buddha said, the self is an illusion, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about the story we tell ourselves about ourselves. That's an illusion that limits our freedom. And everybody's story in this room is not helping your freedom, it's limiting your freedom. The story is limiting the freedom. And as you get more and more invested in it as time goes on, that's what aging. Aging is the investment in story. It's not... aging, from the point of view of conscious awareness, there is no aging, by the way. Conscious awareness does not age. The conscious awareness, if you're in touch with your conscious awareness at 15, your conscious awareness at 30, conscious awareness at 45, conscious awareness at 70, the conscious awareness that you're paying attention to does not age at all. Only the contents that it's interested in changes. So you bind yourself up early and just keep yourself bound up. And then as you get older, you're more invested in your stories. And then you get more rigid because, and then you just get more and more bitchy because you just get more and more, you know, you get more and more attached to your story. And then you put up a big fortress around it like, oh, shit. And then, you know, there you go. You're screwed, okay? But you screw yourself. I mean, nobody screwed you. You just, you know, oh, shit, I think I'll just get behind the story. And they're usually really stupid. I mean, the stories are really stupid. I'm like this. You've got an early idea of I'm like this. And then everything feeds into I'm a loser. I'm a winner. And then it fits and everything fits into that. Oh, yeah, that proves. Oh, yeah, that's another proof. It's all, you know, once you buy into the story, you know, 12 years old, you buy into a story and you never give it up. Shit. 13 years old, you buy into a story. I'm not good with it. Then you buy it, then you invest in it, and then you spend your whole life. And it's really sad. But
two questions online. One is, are there other markers of this freedom? That's one. And the second question is, how to nurture confidence in one's own nature?
Okay. Do you have that thing? Do you have the handout?
Yeah, so you can reference.
Okay. A perfect moment for the Six Patriarch Sutra. Okay. Let's
share. Maybe people share. I think there's probably enough.
Yeah, two pages a set.
Yeah, there's 2 pages a set. Okay. The people online want to type in the question. Now you can type it in. I'm going to ask them.
There's 2 pages.
Well, we're looking at the reference text on the website. There's a little link there. You can click.
Well, maybe we can read some of these because this is from a Buddha, a very, very, for those people who are not familiar,
can we share it with
a super, super... and again, this is the text of the Six Patriarch. I would say we're going to use this text, and I've just taken 4 or 5 quotes out of it here. We're going to use this text, by the way, appreciate it if you don't. This is a translation that we've recently done. If you cannot publish it or take it, this is a translation that is an in-house translation that we're in the process of publishing. So you're using it before we're publishing it, so please don't take it out in a commercial sense. If you want to take it with you to read it, that's fine, but don't take it out in a commercial sense. So the Six Patriarch is really important because the Six Patriarch was doing a reformation to contemporary China that's actually very similar to the contemporary construct of the moment. And the Six Patriarch is performing a kind of revitalizing Buddhism within China, bringing it back to primary mind, very similar to where we are right now in America and world in world cultures. Everybody, so the Six Patriarchs are very good contemporary. So what does he say? He says the capacity of mind is vast and far-reaching, like empty space. So are you already there?
Maybe you can just say the number next to it so that people
2-1. Okay, we're reading 2-1. So here's what your mind's like, okay? The capacity of your mind is vast and far-reaching like empty space. So there's a good marker. Are you experiencing it as vast as empty space?
I think I'm pretty scared of it.
Okay. It has no boundaries. Is that how your conscious awareness is? See, as soon as you get an object of desire, you see it collapses that. So is everybody, are we clear? As soon as a distraction, object of desire, fear, or anything emerges in that empty space, The empty space collapses. The whole conscious awareness thing collapses on that. Does everybody see the process that we're talking about? It's an empty space, collapse. So watch your day. Collapse, 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 right? And then get all wound up. Then if you get all wound up in something, it takes over the whole conscious awareness. As soon as you get wound up in something like that's obsessive, either fears, loves, desire, whatever that's obsessive, the conscious awareness is totally taken over and there's no space to be aware from. Are we good? This is why it's better not to get all obsessed by something, okay? Just stay cool, okay? Okay, is everybody so... Don't get too excited. Okay. So, yeah, it is neither square nor round, large nor small, nor is it blue, yellow, red, or white. It has no above or below, no short or long. Moreover, it has no anger or joy. It's not excessively, it doesn't have to be happy. Happy meaning dependently happy on something happening versus just fundamentally content. It doesn't have to have right or wrong. You're right. He's wrong. I've been wrong. You're right. He's wrong. I'm right. You're right. I mean, just think of a given evening. How much right or wrong is there, okay? There's no good or evil. There's no beginning or end. So there's the mark. 2-2. Good and wise friends, our own essential nature is able to contain 10,000 things. Now, if you're in the Mahayana Buddhism, you realize that what's taught is once your conscious awareness is truly realizes its emptiness, if you'll stay in that contented, empty, solitude awareness and get settled and comfortable, you'll eventually see that it contains everything in the universe within that. There's nothing outside of it. But right now, you're not actually in contact with anything. You're neither in the emptiness of your unconscious awareness nor actually in touch with anything going on, because why? You're in the illusion of it. You're trapped in the illusion, so you're neither in the content, comfortable awareness of your own conscious awareness, nor are you actually connected to anything that's going on, because you're only in the illusion of what's going on. There's where the problem lies. And because to a degree, you kind of know you're in the illusion of everything, you're not very confident for a very good reason, because you have no idea what the hell you're doing. So there's a pretty good reason for your lack of confidence. You have no idea what the hell you're doing, but you just keep doing it. Then you wake up Sunday morning, you're like, what the hell's going on? Well, you have no idea what you're doing. Okay? Right? Okay. So this, the myriad dharmas, absolutely everything, are within the nature of all people. Everything possible that you can imagine or exist are within the nature of all people. If you can regard all people, the bad as well as the good, without grasping or rejecting, your mind will be like empty space. Another marker, any judgment about anyone else of any kind is always a projection. It's the way you get your identity, right? You spend your entire day judging yourself vis-a-vis everything else, which is a lot of work, and it's all bullshit. Like a total day of bullshit, just judging to make sure you have your little space of your bullshit going. Is everybody fine? The problem? Does everybody know themselves all day in that process? Are we good so far? Okay, 2, 3, good and wise friends. If you can cultivate a mind that does not cling to anything inside or outside, attached to. Where's the problem? Attachment. The problem is the attachment. The mind moves, empty. You're completely contented in empty space. Everything's perfect. The mind moves. Now we know, if we study a little more Buddhism, the mind's movement is karmic. In other words, the mind movements actions of the past. You're not going to control the movement of your mind right now. Sorry. Okay. The reason you're not going to be able to control the movement of your mind right now is because all that movement's been based on past movements of the mind. So the present movement's based on past movements. You're not going to be able to completely control what moves in your mind, as you all know. What you can do, though, is you can watch it move. And then the key thing is that when it moves, that you don't attach to the movement or attach to what you're projecting. If you cannot attach the movement will lose its power over you. But if you attach to the movement of your mind, then it reinforces the habits of the past. So every time your mind moves and you attach, you're duplicating the habits of the past. You're giving reinforcement to those habits. And every time you don't, then that habit has that much less power, thought by thought, emotion by emotion. There's no magic. It's thought by thought, emotion by emotion. Every time the mind doesn't move habitually, that habituation has that much less power over the freedom of your mind. And every time the mind moves with it, then it reinforces the habit of that on your mind, and you have that much less freedom. Is everybody? It's a very simple mechanism. There's nothing metaphysical. There's no magic. Nothing metaphysical, not complicated. It's just hard because it's just constantly going. Blah, 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 blah. Okay? So, if you can cultivate the mind that does not cling to anything inside and comes and goes freely, your mind that comes and goes freely, such a mind that can get rid of all grasping gains unhindered understanding. Why would it gain unhindered understanding? Because your conscious awareness is not dead, it's totally alive, and it's totally attentive. And being totally attentive and now no longer having the habituation, it could actually see what's actually going on. Whereas right now, you can't see what's going on because you're interpreting it through your own projections of your mind. You're not seeing what's going on. You're just seeing your projections. This conscious awareness is not dead. Empty. It's not empty in the sense that it contains the whole of causation within it. We're talking about the empty mind here. We're talking about the empty mind that contains all causation. What we mean by empty is that it's not limited by the habituation of your own frame of reference that doesn't allow you to see anything that's going on, really. Is everybody fine? Because it's only seeing what you're projecting. Number 2, 4, good and wise friends. When you contemplate and illuminate with a wisdom that clearly penetrates both inside and outside, you can discern your original mind, which is what we're talking about. Recognizing your original mind is the fundamental liberation or freedom. And this freedom is itself the prajna samadhi. This is no thought, okay? Should we keep reading some of these? Okay, chapter 3. These are just taken from different chapters. We're in chapter 3. I'm just taking one quote from each chapter, sort of. Good and wise friends, why do we take freedom from thought as our core principle? Okay, now this is somebody asking the sixth patriarch. So you could have asked me that. Unfortunately, I'm not the sixth patriarch. So. You're going to get a really dumb answer, but we'll just read the six-page record. Okay. Because there are deluded people who claim to have seen their essential nature, yet their minds get stirred up over sensory states. So here's the problem. People say, oh, I'm free in our new contemporary world. But are they really free? Because every time a sensory experience, they're moved. So they're not free. There's a potential for freedom, but it's not really free because it's moved very easily, particularly by sensory states. In fact, isn't that the whole problem? Is the incredible onslaught of sensory states overwhelming the senses all the time. So there's no space, no place of where you can settle in your own conscious awareness. And now you become habituated to the overflow of sense. And when I take that away, you feel bored and anxious, because the overwhelm of the sensory experience is taking up your conscious awareness as an habituation. And when I take it away, you'll be bored and unhappy and anxious. You won't be peaceful and happy. Is everybody? You're going to have to get through the gate, because the problem is we've already created a sensory overload, and we're going to have to get through the gate where the conscious awareness can settle in itself without feeling the loss or lack of that sensory experience. Is everybody? Did everybody understand the problem? So on one hand, we have this incredible freedom, and on the other hand, we have this incredible sensory overload working against it. We're in a conflict. The contemporary state is in a state of conflict between an incredible amount of freedom and an incredible amount of sensory overload coming at it from the other direction. That's a lot of the reason for the tension and confusion and distraction and so forth. That's another reason for the problem. They then create wrong views based on these thoughts. And from this, all kinds of afflictions. Afflictions are like your emotions. Like the restlessness of your mind is an affliction. Jealousy is an affliction. You know, the afflictions. Afflictions are those emotions that take over conscious awareness that you can't control. Have you ever had one of those? Has anybody in here ever had an affliction? This is a emotion, mood, or something that overtakes your conscious awareness, and it's got so much control over it, doesn't feel. This is not the same thing as an emotion. Be careful. An affliction is something that takes over. Jealousy. Well, let's use an example. Jealousy is an affliction. If anybody here has been jealous, you know how that just takes the hell, takes you over. You can't even.
Anger
takes you over. That's an affliction. Distraction, you know, there's a lot of. An emotion could come up, and you could see an emotion, and you could let it go. It could come up, and if you don't go with the emotion, it could disappear. It's not an affliction.
You could do the same thing with affliction.
You could.
Mindful enough, potentially.
You could. But by the time it's an affliction, it's already been down a long road. Let me just show anger. Okay, for instance, let's look at anger. Anger all comes from the same source. You are being messed with. Okay, all anger comes to the same place. You're driving along, or you're doing, and then somebody does something that fucks with you. That's where it starts. Like, now, you don't catch that moment because, you know, you don't catch the moment when somebody's messed with me. But it all starts from self and your projections, and somebody's messed with your projections. And then you get a little irritated. Like you go, they mess with me. Now I'm a little bit irritated. Now you try to get control over that irritation. Okay. So you start getting, and then irritations. Now, if they just let it go, you know, you might be able to you might be able to take that first irritation and let it go. But if either you yourself or they or the situation does not seem to be able to contain the level of that irritation, it starts growing. You know, the irritation starts growing and it starts taking over more and more. You can actually watch this happen in you. It starts taking over your conscious awareness. You had a little space there, and if you at the very beginning let it go, you would have passed on by and gotten into your day without killing the guy because he was texting in front of you in the theater. But the way, as the day progresses, and in America, you have to shoot him, you know, before the day's over. I mean, if you're in another country, you wouldn't shoot them, but since there's, let me just, you know, in America there are 34,000 murders a year and 450,000 people wounded by gunfire in a year. 450,000. We talk about a war in Syria or Iraq or something like that. There's many more people killed and wounded in the United States than any war in the world right now. The Vietnam War, we killed more people in a year in America than the Vietnam War. So I just want to make sure we're on the same place here, okay? So if you have a license to irritation, everyone's going to start shooting each other, you know? And, of course, you have to have a weapon, too, because that's important. And the weapon needs to be a multi-fire machine gun, mother. That magazine can have at least 62 bullets. So you can see the irritation, you know, it starts to, then the irritation, and it starts going, and you can watch it in yourself. You can watch it from the minor thought. And as by the time it becomes an affliction, it's taken over your conscious awareness. And if once it becomes an affliction, if you notice, it takes you over your physical body over. And to get over it can take hours or days. That's if you haven't hit the person or told her she's a bitch or shot somebody. If you get there, if your body moves, it's over. Because now you've like created, you've ruined the relationship, shot the person, ended up in jail. I mean, remember, this can all happen in a very short amount of time. Okay. We're talking just inside the mind, it takes a day, sometimes hours or a day or a week to get over it. And that's not even taking the physical action. Once you've taken the physical action, your whole life changes. Your whole life can change from 2 hours or an hour or 15 minutes of this. Does everybody see what we mean by affliction? You know,
afflictions can be as basic as emotions, or they can escalate as you.
They
say.
Can, but an emotion is not an affliction. I just want to point out that at the level of emotion, everyone could control it.
Because like jealousy, anger.
But jealousy came from a series of emotions.
A series. So afflictions are a series.
They're not an emotion. They're not jealousy did not come from. You didn't get to jealousy just out of jealousy. You got to jealousy through a whole series of emotions, starting with love, then attachment, then control.
This is what we're talking about, like with the Yogacara. They have like kind of the waves, and they're forming from like a whole bunch of past habits.
Right. But make sure that you're really aware that on the level of emotion, you have a lot of control you don't know you have. Everybody in here, on the level of emotion, emotions are simply past, what emotions are, is experiences of the past that you're applying to the present. Emotions are experiences from the past that you're applying to the present. In the past, you had a certain emotion about this kind of experience, and now you're having that kind of experience in the present moment. And from the past, you're conjuring up a past experience that you're applying to the present moment. If you catch yourself right then, an emotion is almost as easy to let go as a thought. A thought's easier to let go. An emotion's harder to let go. Is everybody following me? But do not confuse emotions with affliction, because you have a lot of emotions all day that do not turn to afflictions. And if you catch them as emotions, you still have a lot of choice. What's freedom? Freedom is choice. You have choice to go with emotions. By the time they turn to afflictions, your choice is really narrow. You know, by the time it gets to afflictions, the conscious awareness where you can actually have choice begins to disintegrate. Is everybody fine? That's what afflictions here, okay? So I just want to make sure we understood what afflictions were here. And misunderstandings are generated. In their own essential nature, there is basically not a single thing that can be grasped. In other words, held on to. In your conscious awareness, as it is in its freedom, there's not a single thing that it's attached to. Your conscious awareness, as it inherently is within itself, is not attached to a single thought or emotion. They're passing through. To hold that there is something to get, or something you lack, either way. Because remember, what is something to get starts from something you lack. Where's your problem? Lacking. What's totally okay thinks it's lacking. All your problems come from that. You're totally okay all the time. But then this thought of lacking comes up, and from the lacking, then you want. And then the wanting, then you start moving and grasping. So it's a lacking, wanting. So something is, okay, to hold that there is something to get leads to reckless talk of failure and success, like I'm failing or succeeding in getting. And it's all reckless talk because the getting or not getting all started from the lacking and wanting, which was empty to start with. It was empty at its beginning. Therefore, our teaching establishes freedom from thought as its source and core doctrine, because freedom from thought is the conscious awareness without being attached. Okay, are we all good? Okay, chapter 6, to repent. The Avatamsaka clearly says that we should return and rely on your own Buddha, not with some other Buddha. So are you going to return to your own Buddha, you guys? You please return to your Buddha. If you do not return to the Buddha within, there is nothing you can rely on. Ooh. Let me read that sentence again to our topic tonight. A lack of confidence in your Buddha.
Your awakened mind.
Not awakened. The mind you're paying attention to me right now. Forget about this awakened stuff.
Well, that's what Buddha is.
No.
Why are you putting a Buddha on it?
No. The Buddha is the mind right now you're paying attention. The Buddha nature of it is expansive. We could expand and expand and expand. And, of course, the expansiveness of this could get to a massive expansion. But what we're talking about right now is the mind ground that has this ultimate expansiveness to it. So if you do not return to the Buddha within, there is nothing you can rely on. There's no place you can rely, because anything else is on something that's an aspect of the mind. It's a theory of the mind. It's a doctrine. Right? It's an identity. It's a theory. Anything other than this mind ground that's where you exist right now, there's nothing else that you can be confident, because that's the only place you exist from the beginning to the end. And there isn't a beginning and end, but that's a whole other issue. We'll leave that alone.
But in the mind ground, you still have those emotions and afflictions of
They do. But remember, like in the Yogacara, the eighth consciousness that you're talking about right now is both the clear Buddha nature and that which is coming up in the mirror at the same time.
Okay, so you're getting to that ground, but you...
Well, go sit in that ground right now and see what happens. As you sit in that ground, all those things will muddy it up, like water. Like you put yourself in the content... Okay, go sit somewhere now in contented stillness of your own solitude and see what happens. Oh, I'm not contented in my solitude.
And it's not still.
Oh, my Buddha Nate, my Buddha contentment has stuff in it. Oh, what's the step?
Okay.
What's the step? It's stuff. But we seize on each of the stuff as though it was like actually happening or something, or it was actually important or something, or like blah, blah, blah. Okay? Time is up. Time is up. Well, see, they got to tell me, because otherwise we go till 12 o'clock and we never stop. So people have to stop me. Well, we did. Should we stop there? We can leave these for them to...
Maybe any last questions?
Okay. Any last comments or questions? Did we do enough?
More than enough.
More than enough. That's always good. More than enough, I feel good about. Do we leave with a sense of inspiration and direction, or overwhelmed Overwhelmed. The Buddha's overwhelmed? Is your Buddha got a sense of direction, or is your Buddha overwhelmed?
Into actually how to like get into closer to that freedom next time.
Okay. Well, first of all, we have to kind of establish that place, right? And what we're talking about. So do we do that? They can take these with them, right?
Yeah, they would like.
And read them during the next week.
Or you can leave it here and we'll use it next
week. You can, and they all want to read over this every day before you meditate, or when you're about ready to get into a fight or something like that, read one of these.
Or shoot someone.
Yeah, if the guy's texting in front of you and you're pulling out your weapon to shoot him, read one. Oh, wait, before I shoot you. Clearly you should.
Read the last verse that you're saying. Doug, you want to do the last, as a closing?
Oh, the last one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The parting verse, I thought we might recite this parting verse at the end. This is the last thing the sixth patriarch said before he passed. So maybe if people think it's kind of, to do a little ritual, this is sort of like ritual. We don't do ritual here. We, in this group, we're not doing ritual, but maybe here's the final verse that the sixth patriarch passed on to his disciples before he passed away. He said, firm and steady, not cultivating good, cultivating in parentheses, light and happy, doing no evil, calm and clear, no dusty sights and sounds, vast, vast, the unbound liberated mind. Should we say that together? Can we read that together? Okay. Firm and steady, not cultivating good. Light and happy, doing no evil. Calm and clear, no dusty sights and sounds. Vast, vast, the unbound liberated mind.
Okay.
Okay.
That winds up the evening.
Cool.
So, like I said, this is a work in progress. If people have feedback for us, you can talk to Jason, Kian, Jing Husher, myself. I probably won't be able to catch Doug, but any of us, and give us some feedback. It goes in outer space pretty quick. So, are you people online can send
about
us
outer
some
space,
as well.
In space.
It's in space.
Moving in
goes
space.
Empty space. Okay, so that concludes tonight, and we'll try to do this every week. Jing Husher and myself will be doing next week. And I said we'll be trying to just unpack a little bit what Doug was saying. And I think we'll probably make a kind of more practical things about how to get in touch with that freedom that was being talked about.
Yeah, maybe you can get an idea what solitude and quiet solitude means next week.
And how to be confident in that. Okay.